And we're holding on Kuf Ayin Dalet Amud Beis, the fifth line from the bottom. We learned yesterday about the case where person where father left a debt that that his children still owe that was still owed and which an Orev had paid. Then we discussed the dinim of when the Orev is and isn't entitled to reimbursement from the children right away. When is he going to have to wait till they're older, etc. And we mentioned in that connection the point that you might have a case where before he died, he admitted that he still owes the debt. So then we say there's no, we talked about yesterday, the possibility of tsrori, that maybe he gave a bundle of money or goods or something ahead of time to pay off the debt. But now, if before he dies, he says that he still owes the money, then obviously he didn't do tsrori. Or we said that the Beis Din put him in Chayrim for not listening to them and even coming to Beis Din. He died still in Chayrim, also demonstrating that he still hadn't paid off the debt. So now the Gemara digresses a little bit to talk about this, about these kinds of points, about when a person says something before he dies, what we do with his statement. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Huna, Shchiv Mera shehikdish kol nechasav. A Shchiv Mera declared that all of his nechasim are hekdish. The Omar, but then he also says, Mone la ploini biyadi, that there's ploini owes, that I owe ploini a mone. So out of those things that I was makdish, actually one mone of it belongs to this other guy. Neman, then we believe him. And we give the money to that other person. Is he maybe trying to take it away from Hektish illegally? No, because Chazaka ain't on a Moshe Knunya a la Hektish, because we have a Chazaka. A person is not going to go play tricks and try to play games like that about Hektish. People realize that Hektish is a severe thing. So Tosfos points out over here, actually, that you're talking about here where he was a Shchiv Mera, where he was Makdish, all of his Nechasim. Then actually we had a discussion about it. We had a discussion about it in the previous Perek about whether if he recovers, whether he can retract that or not, as we learned there extensively, the whole point about that usually a matnas shchiv mera is revocable when he recovers. Anyway, Tosfos says over here that we're talking about that here he was makdish when he was still healthy, so then it's irrevocable. But now, before he dies, he says mona l'ploini biyadi. So the point is that with a bori, we would have to be concerned. We're not going to say that a person doesn't make a knunya on a hektish, but that would be when he's about to die anyway. And at einonim choyte v'loy loy, as the expression is, a person is not going to sin where it's just going to benefit somebody else. So if he was a bori, then maybe we would have to be concerned that that he is doing it in order to make a knunya with this other guy or something. Anyway. Maskiflor of Nachman. So Rav Nachman asks on that. So you're telling me a person is not going to make a knunya on hekdish, but in a similar kind of thing where you have a shchiv mera says to give a mona to Pliny. So v'chi adam oisek knunya al bonav, would a person make a knunya against his own children to cheat them out of something that they would otherwise rightfully get? Obviously not, but the problem is the Rav Shmuel, the Ami Tavayu, don't Rav and Shmuel both say Shchimra from a mona l'ploini biyadi, that if a Shchimra says without reference to Hektish, he just says that I owe ploini a mona, so it depends what he says afterwards. Omar Tnu, if he says give it to him, noisnin, then fine, we give it to him. Loy Omar Tnu, but if he did not say give it, a noisnin, then we don't give it. Alma, now what's the point of that? What do we see from that? Odom also shall asbia es bonav, because we might have a person does not want that his children should appear satisfied, that they should appear rich in people's eyes. In other words, he wants to avoid an ayin hara or other undesirable consequences of it. So therefore, now he's claiming that some of it belongs to somebody else, a mona being a significant amount of money, but that doesn't mean that he actually means that it's actually owed to them. So Hochanami, he also, when it comes to the Hektish, why can't we say that when he's saying a mona goes to Pliny, what it really means is Odom Osir Shalalas Bias Atzmai, he doesn't want that people should think that he's rich. So why are you saying in the case of Hektish that even if he doesn't say Tnu, then you still give it, whereas when he's saying that I owe a mona to somebody else, then we give it only if he says tnu. Now the Rashba points out, I mean, look, if he gave all his nechassim to Hektish, then obviously he doesn't have any money anyhow. So then anyway, there's no shalol asbiya satzmai. So what we mean is that he said that all of the nechassim that we know of, he gave to Hektish. So people are going to think that he has other nechassim that we don't know about. The Ritva gives a different explanation. That it means that he doesn't want people to say that he was rich his entire lifetime. So now he's saying, to begin with, even all this money that you thought that I have, some of it at least belonged to somebody else. And I wasn't really that rich after all. So why don't we say that? Why, in the case of Hektish, are we saying across the board that we say that we're going to take that money from what we thought he had given everything to Hektish, and we're going to give it to Pliny, and we don't do that where it's against his own children's Yerusha. Tosfos, by the way, points out over here that anyway, this whole thing of Adam Osich Shalalas B.S. Bonav would be only if the other person didn't come and sue him in Beis Din. So he himself, of his own volition, is saying that this money belongs to Pliny. Otherwise, if they took him to Beis Din and he admitted, then it's going to be, then the money would have to be paid regardless. Then we don't say Las B.S. Bonav. Then it would be a matter of he could say mashata ani b'cha. I'm just kidding, basically. But we wouldn't say that by a shchivmana because a person is not going to do that. Anyway, the point is getting back. So again, getting back to the Gemara. Why is it in the case with Hektish where we say that we do give the money regardless whether we said tnu or not? Why is it with his children we don't say that? So the answer is Kika Amar Rav Huna Hasam the Nukit Shtara, because Rav Huna is talking about where the other person where the Shchiv Merah is saying that he owes the money to actually has a shtar. So he has a shtar chayv. Well, he has a shtar chayv, and the Shchiv Merah admits that he hadn't paid him. So therefore we do have to give it to him. The question is, so you're telling me then, rather, Rav Huna's case with the Hektish, where he had said everything goes to Hektish except for this mona, is talking about where the other guy has a shtar. Well, the question is, so you're telling me Rav and Shmuel's case is where he says, I owe a money to Pliny, and they said that if he doesn't say tnu, then you don't give it. Are we also so what are we talking about? The guy doesn't have the shtar? Then why amatnu? So what does it help if he says give it? Still, amatnu noisnin, still milval pehava, isn't it still only a milval peh because we're saying that the guy doesn't have a shtar? And Rav and Shmuel both say that with a milval peh, you cannot collect from Yoshin. You also can't collect from lekuchas. You can't collect from nechassim mishabadim. We're going to revisit that point. On Amud Beis. The point is. So no shtar. Then what is it? What does it matter? How does it help if he says tnu? And the Rashbam points out that you're not going to say it's not a matter of mitzvah l'kayim divra mes, because then, fine, mitzvah l'kayim divra mes would kick in after he passes away, they should give it. When we're talking about over here, Rav and Shmuel's din, that if he says tnu, noisnin, that means we give it right away, even while he's alive. So on what basis would that be? If there's no shtar, if there's no shtar, then they wouldn't have to give it at all. There's a different explanation. Also, the Torah Chaim gives an explanation that mitzvah l'kayim divrei mes would be, for example, when you have the money is in the hands of a third party. We had the case earlier in the Masechta, for example, where he says, where he gives instructions before he dies, he says to the trustee who's managing his money, the apotropos, or whatever you want to call him, that give my sons a sela or a shekel per week for their expenses because I don't want all the nechassim to be used up. We don't necessarily say mitzvah l'kayim divrei mes. We were dealing with the Yoshim here directly. Tosfos points out also in this regard, what about the concept of divrei shchivmana kiksuvin v'chimesurin damu, that when a shchivmana says something, it's considered as though written and given. But Tosfos says that it's one thing where he's giving it as a matona. Then we say the point is we don't want him to get mentally anguished that here he wants to give a matana, and his children may do it, but here we say, and that's because of a milveh, so it's something else. So it's something else. It wouldn't have any more power than the original milveh, and without a shtar, there's no reason they should have to give it. So again, then if we're talking, so if there's a shtar, then why are Rav and Shmuel saying that he has to say tnu? And if there's no shtar, what does it help for him to say tnu? So Ella Omer Rav Nachman Aidi va'Aidi d'Nokit Shtara. So rather, Rav Nachman says both cases are talking about where the other guy has the shtar. V'loy kasha ha d'mekuyam ha d'loy mekuyam. Rav Huna's din is talking about where the shtar has already been mekuyam. It's already been brought to Beis Din and certified that it's genuine. So therefore, so now, so now we have to give the mana to Pliny. So even though that we're coming and taking away from we're talking away from we're coming and taking away something that we thought belonged to Hektish, nevertheless we do that on the basis of the Shtar Mekuyam. Whereas Rav and Shmuel's din are talking about where the Shtar has not yet been Mekuyam. So therefore, so to Oma Tnu, so if he says give it, then fine. Kaime l'shtari, then it means in effect what he's doing is with his hodah, he's saying that the shtar is genuine as a concept that we talked about before, where he admits that where he admits that the shtar is valid. So therefore, so he admits he admits that the shtar is genuine. Now there's no more possibility of claiming that it's forged or anything like that. So therefore, go ahead and give it to them. As opposed to if he but if he didn't say tnu, means he hasn't not yet been mekayim the shtar. So therefore, and just his instructions might mean that he doesn't want people to think that his children are rich. Therefore, at least we're going to have to take the shtar to base. And be Makai, the Malva is gonna, or whatever that he is that owes the other guy the money for whatever reason, is gonna have to take a shtar to Beis Din and be Makayim it, and then we can talk about him collecting with it. Tosfos has a lot of discussion about this. First of all, Tosfos has a bunch of questions. First of all, then what's the chiddush? Of course, if it's a shtar makoyim, he can collect, and what does it matter what the Shchiv Menah says? And why do we have to mention Hekdesh? And then Tosfos goes through several questions. The point is that because he has the shtar, if he only had the shtar, then yes, he would be able to collect, but he would also have to swear because he's coming to collect from the Chosim Meshabadim, and as a rule, he would have to swear by that. So therefore, now that we have the Shchiv Menah saying this, then that saves him from a shvur. So there's that, and then on the other hand, if it's not Mekuyam, then wouldn't the father have been able to claim when he was alive that it was actually forged until he's Mekayim it? So why can't the children should be able to make such a claim as well? No, we say that So no, we say that we're talking about that the loiva might the loiva might well say that he paid it, that he didn't pay it. He might want to say shaloi las bias banav, but here where he so he you might have, in other words, he wouldn't say to begin with that it's forged. He might claim that he didn't pay it because even though he actually did pay it, because people don't know that he paid it. And again, shaloi las bias banav, but so all the guy needs to do is be mekayim his shtar, and then he can collect on that basis. Okay. Another din in this connection, the Gemara continues, Omer Rabba. Rabba says in this connection, so in this connection, Shchiv Merah Shama Mona L'Ploini B'Yodi, if the Shchiv Merah says that I owe Ploini a Mona, V'Omri Yisraelim Parainu, and after he passed away, the Yisraelim said, we paid it back, Ne'em Monim, then we will believe them, and that's that. I mean, when we say believe them, we don't mean that's that, and there's not going to be a dintodon on it at all. We just mean, in other words, that that's a strong claim that at most the other guy would have the other guy might have to take a shavua, they would have to take a shavuos heses, etc. But basically, we would believe them. Tnu mona l'ploni, but if he says just give a mona to ploni, v'omer yisonim parainu, and the yisonim say we paid it back, ein nemonim, then we don't believe them. Well, the Gemara asks, what's the logic? Klapilaya, where that said, which way is that going? It seems to be backwards. Ipchabistabra, it seems the logic seems to be the other way around. Oma tnu mona, since when he says give a mona, then just like in the previous piece, we said given to poskavu in the milsa, their father said it definitively, you give it to him. So ikulamema de pare. So then there's quite a, it's quite logical that they listened to what their father said and they actually paid it. But if he says mona ploni biyadi, kivin de posakavu and lamilsa, but if he just says I owe ploni a mona, he didn't definitively say and therefore go and give it to him. Maybe we should say that they didn't pay it because on what basis would we say we don't know for sure that we don't know for sure that they did. He didn't even give them explicit instructions to pay it. So why should we say as a given that they necessarily paid it? So the Gemara says Ella, now the Gemara could have flipped around what the Gemara could have flipped around what Rabbah says. However, Tosfos points out the Gemara knew that Rabbah had definitely said that in a case where he says mona l'ploni, we believe them. So we have to we so we can't just flip around what Rabbah says. We have to actually reinterpret it. Therefore, so the Gemara says, Ela itmar hochi itmar. Rather, we can say that if Rabbah had said it, then this is what he said. In other words, let's reinterpret what Rabbah says. Where he said that I owe ploni a mona, but without the word tnu, v'omer yisoimim, and then the yisoimim say, Chozav v'omelanu abba paraiti. Our father then afterwards told us that yes, I did owe him a mona, but then I paid it off. Then we believe them. Then we believe them that their father had said that. My timer. Why would that be? It could be midkar because we would say then it just means he remembered. First he thought he still owed the money, and then afterwards he remembered that he then afterwards he remembered that he paid it back. So paraiti means, in other words, previously I had paid back. On the other hand, what he says, tnu mona l'ploni, but if he says give a mona to ploni, which is its actual instructions to give it, v'omer yisoimim chozav v'omer abba paraiti, and then afterwards the yisoimim say that our father said he did pay it, ein nemonin. And then Rabbah says we wouldn't believe them, the im issa depare, because if in fact he had paid him, lo yhava oma tnu, he wouldn't have told them to begin with tnu. He wouldn't have told them the instruction give, which shows clearly that he that it needs to be given because it hasn't been given yet. We wouldn't assume that in that case that he had, we wouldn't say in that case that we would assume that he forgot and then he remembered, because then to begin with, he wouldn't have said an expression like tnu over there. So Tosfos discusses this a little bit. One thing is that now there can be cases where we believe a person to say that he made a mistake, but not where you have where he says mona l'ploni, then we can believe him to say paraiti because he could say because sometimes you can have that he has a migui, he could say I paid now versus I paid later on. But in our case that wouldn't really apply. So and yesh meforshim Tosfos says by shimra specifically he's not his mind is not so clear. So therefore maybe this concept wouldn't apply to a body as well. So one thing is actually there's other points about it among Rishonim as well. The Rif explains before we were talking about according to Rav and Shmuel where we said that it depends whether he said tnu or not. So Rif explains that where he's saying in a way in a derech hoda, he's saying in a way of admission that he owes money. So then we're going to say that he then we're going to say it has to be paid, as we're saying over here. Right? And even if the Yisoyim claim that afterwards the father said he didn't pay, he paid, then we wouldn't believe them because he said it derech hoda. So which the Nimuka Yosef on the Rif explains that, for example, he says I admit that I owe this person money. So that means that it's not just a matter of before we were talking about shaloi las b'yes bonav. He might be saying it just so people don't think his children are rich. But if he says it a loshen like that, I admit ani moide that I owe this person money. Then that would be that he that we actually hold him to that. Then we have we talked about before, according to Tosfos, that there can be a distinction whether somebody else sued him in Beis Din, and the Rosh says similarly over here. He understands the Rif to be saying that that here we're talking about in the Gemara, according to Rabbah, where somebody was teveya, somebody came and confronted the Shchivra and says you owe me money, and he says you're right, I do owe you money. So then it's not obviously not las b'yes bonav. Then it would be actual derech haidah. So that's another way of explaining when the Rif says derech haidah would be another way of explaining that. And Rav and Shmuel, we're talking about where he just said it unilaterally. Then you have actually that. So both of those ways of understanding the both of those ways of understanding the Rif assume that that Rabbah is not arguing with Rav and Shmuel. They're talking about slightly different scenarios. So again, that either that when Rav and Shmuel said that if he says I owe the money, but he doesn't say tnu, then we don't necessarily give it. So one way of understanding is that whereas Rabbah is saying over here that if he says tnu, then we do have to give it, and even if they claim afterwards that he said we that he that our father said he paid it off, we don't believe them. So one explanation is that here he's saying derech hoidah, he's saying in a way of hoidah, which means either that he says I admit that I owe plenty money according to Nimuka Yosef, or the other guy confronts him and he says you know what you're right, I owe you the money according to the Rosh, and either way we're not going to say it's las b'yes bonav, as opposed to Rav and Shmuel before we'd be talking about where you don't have those. With that said, the Baal HaMor argues on the Rif, as he very often does, and says that in fact Rabbah is arguing with Rav and Shmuel. And then in turn, the Ramban goes and argues with Baal HaMor and defends the Rif as he often does as well. Another case, the Gemara says, Boy Rava, so Rava asks a question in this regard. So actually, what would happen if the Shchivra admits? So the Baal Chayiv comes and says, you know, you owe me a money, and the Shchivra says, you're right. Now, the point is that Rashbam says, we're going to learn in Sanhedrin in a couple of weeks, that's the Shem, that in general, when a person says, yes, I owe you money, he would, if there are people, there would have to be Edim over there, and he would have to say, Atim Edai, he would have to say, you are my Edim, that I owe plenty of the money. Otherwise, we would say that he could say, Meshatani Bacha, that I'm making a joke, that I'm not actually, you can't hold me to what I'm saying. So now the question is over here, would that be necessary? So in this case, does he have to actually tell them that you are my edim, and otherwise he could say mashatani b'cha, that or do we not say that? So that's the first question. And second of all, second of all, does he have to tell them to write this down or not? Now, earlier in the Masechta, it talked about that when a person does a Haidah, when he does this kind of thing, yes, I admit, I owe you money, it would have to be in the presence of two Edim, and he would have to tell them to write it down, otherwise the other guy doesn't have, so earlier, actually, the Gemara had discussed that, there were various cases over there where Rava had brought over there, you have a Machah versus Maidah, so Haidah, we said over there, Haidah b'fnei shnayim, that a Haidah has to be done in front of two people, it's not enough that he just says it, because otherwise he could say, Meshatani b'cha, but then he would also, the loiva would have to give permission to write it down. Because otherwise he doesn't. Otherwise you don't have his permission to make it into a milvah b'shtar. And the point is, even if he admitted in front of Edim, he'd still have the ability later on to claim that he paid it off. After all, if he borrowed money even in the presence of Edim or admitted in the presence of Edim, he's not obligated to pay back in the presence of Edim. So therefore, so in order for it to be written down, he would actually have to give permission for it. So now Rava is asking, does the same thing hold true by the Shchivra?
Rabbi, so a Shchiv Mara is laying there almost dying, and he's going to be making jokes?
That's the question. Adam Meshata B'Shas Misa, would we say even before the person is going to die that he might be making jokes? Not really jokes, but whatever. Like he's saying something that he doesn't mean to actually be held to. Would we say a person wouldn't do that if he knows he's about to die? He's not going to do so. He's not going to do something like that. And if he says it, then we can hold him to his word. So the Gemara says, "Bosa de boya, hold a poshta." After Rava had asked the question, then he answered it. As a matter of fact, yes, einon a meshata b'shas misa. A person is not going to make such a joke or such an unserious statement before he's going to die. So therefore, he doesn't need to say atem edai. And v'divrei shchivmerak suvin v'chimasurin damu. And because what a shchivmerak says is considered as though written and given over, therefore he doesn't need to write ksuvah. He doesn't need to write. He doesn't need to say write it down. Because again, the whole point is that what a Shchivna says is Kiksuvin v'chimasurin, because so Shaloti Torah daito, so he doesn't get confused. Tosfos and the Rashba actually point out that usually when we say Diva Shchivna Kiksuvin v'chimasurin damu, it usually has a slightly different meaning than it means over here. Usually it means that we don't need to make a kinyan for it. Just the fact that he said it is considered as though it's already written and delivered, and no further kinyan is needed. Here, what we're just saying, in other words, that it's considered, it has the strength of something that is already written down. And therefore, so he doesn't need to tell them to write it down, because even if he didn't, then they would still be able to, write it down. Last Mishnah of the Masechta. The Mishnah says, "Amalva." Here's some basic rules about. Here's some basic rules about evidence, about shtaris and all. So the Mishnah says, "Amalva es chaveda b'shtar." Person lends somebody else money with a shtar. So goivim in a chasim mishabodim. Then afterwards, if the loiva doesn't pay up, then he can collect from the chasim mishabodim. The point being, in other words, what's the chiddush of that? The point is that Rashbam says, even if it doesn't say achrayus in the shtar, as we've learned before, as the Gemara discusses extensively in Bava Metzia, achrayus tor sofer, who, even if it doesn't say achrayus in the shtar, then it's considered just a mistake. The sofer left it out by mistake, but nevertheless, achrayus is included. So that includes, so the Gemara talks about it over there in Bava Metzia in connection with sales, for example, that if you're selling a field, achrayus is assumed to be automatically included unless explicitly said otherwise. The same thing over here with a loan, even if it didn't say achrayus, nevertheless, there's achrayus. And there's the idea, which the Gemara talks about in many places. We've talked about earlier in our Perek, for example, that because there's a shtar, then therefore there's a coil about it, and therefore potential buyers know that there's an outstanding loan, and they know they're taking their chances, so therefore now we can take it from them. On the other hand, continues the Mishnah, Al Yudei Edim, on the other hand, if the loan was only in the presence of Edim, but not a shtar choiv, govim nechosim b'nei chorin, then you can only collect from nechosim b'nei chorin. Because then you don't have a coil, and therefore you don't have a coil, and therefore you can't take away from lekuchas. So now the Gemara is going to talk about one point. The Gemara is going to talk about is the famous machlokas shibuda d'oraisa or not. Is the whole concept of shibud, the whole concept that the nechosim are under a lien to the debt, is that d'oraisa or d'rabbanan? So if we say that deraisa, then we would say that midrabbanan, we don't allow him to collect from lekuchas. In this kind of case, mipnei tikkun olam, it would be one of those takonis that Chacham made mipnei tikkun olam, because otherwise nobody's going to want to buy real estate, because there's always going to be that chance that it might get taken away from him. On the other hand, if we say shibud derabbanan, then it means to begin with, the Chachamim made this concept of shibud only when there's a shtar and not when there isn't.
It doesn't have to be that it's written in the shtar.
So that's the point. Daraisa, you wouldn't care if shtar or not. The Torah doesn't generally make a distinction, shtar or not. So midaraisa, we would say they would collect across the board, and midrabbanan, we would say that they don't, because mipnei tikkun olam. Tosfos discusses the point over here that when we talk about things that can't be collected from the shabbadim, is it always because there isn't a coil, or is it sometimes a different reason, mipnei she'enim ksuvim, because you don't know how much it's going to be an open-ended commitment? You talk about, for example, mozana ishava abonis, where you have, for example, or a person has gotten married and he assumes an obligation in his tsuba that after he dies, his wife and his daughters will be provided from out of the estate until they remarry or whatever. So that kind of thing we can't collect from the Chosim Mishabodim. So Tosfos points out that elsewhere Rashi explains that it's basically because of Milval Peh, but it's not really the reason, is because it's open ended, and therefore again nobody would want to buy real estate if they know that there's such a commitment because they would say in that case there's an open ended commitment like that. Who knows? Eventually it might come after us. So therefore that kind of thing is not allowed to be collected from the Chosim Mishabodim. Anyway, so the Mishnah continues. Here's another case. The Malva brings out a shtar with the signature of the loiva, but there's no edim on it, that the loiva owes him money. So then also it's a valid shtar, but only to the extent govim nechasim b'nei chorin. It can only collect from nechasim b'nei chorin, because the same problem that when you have edim, and you have a shtar plus edim, then there's a koil. So now it's the Lakochus' problem. But over here, since you don't have Edim, you only have the Ksav Yoda, you only have the handwriting of the Loiva itself, so then all he can collect, but he can only collect from Nechosim B'nei Chorin. Now, there's an interesting machlokas we've shown him in this connection also. If there's no Edim on the Shtar, would we believe the Loiva to say that he paid it back? When there's edim on it, then no, we're not going to believe him unless he has some kind of evidence. Because look, the Malva has a shtar that shows edim on it. True, you don't have to pay back a loan in the presence of edim, but nevertheless, if you want to claim against the shtar with edim that you paid, you're going to need some more evidence than that. But here, where it's only b'ksav yodai, so the Rif and the Rambam hold that he would be able to claim paraiti. And then the Balamur and the Rashba hold that not after all, because you have a concept called Shtorcha B'Yodi My Boy. The Malva can say, well, if you paid me back, why is your shtar still in my possession? Now you could have counterclaims to that. I asked you for the shtar at the time, and you said it's lost, and I trusted you, etc. There are all kinds of claims and counterclaims that could be made, but the fact is, you do have that concept Shtorcha B'Yodi My Boy.
Signed.
Whereas when it's signed by Edim, then definitely you can say that, and then definitely the other guy can't say paraiti without some kind of counter evidence. Yeah,
this Mishnah is probably only according to the person who holds that. If it's not written down with, if there aren't any witnesses, then it's not a Torah Seferu, right?
No, that's something else. Achrayus is Torah Seferu. That's what we said in the Mishnah. Therefore, that even if it doesn't say Achrayus, he can still collect from Nechosim Mishabodim if it has Edim. You were talking about another case. The Malva has a piece of paper that the Loiva wrote on it. I, Ploini, owe you, Ploini, $100, signed Ploini. So that's good enough that there's no Edim on it. That's good enough to collect from Nechosim B'nei Chorin, but not from Nechosim Mishabodim. Okay. The Mishnah continues. What happens if you have? We learned about yesterday and the day before, all about dinim of orev. Normally, when there's an orev on a shtar, that arevus will be written into the body of the shtar. You're right. Reuven borrowed $100 from Shimon, and Levi is the orev, signed Yehuda and Yisachar. Now what happens is, instead you have the whole shtar is written, you have the Edim signatures, and then underneath that, it says that Ploini is the Orev. So that's Orev HaYotze L'Acha Chitum Shtoris. So you have that Orev, the information about that Orev is after the signatures. So, Govim Menachosim Menachorin, so also when you come in to collect from the Orev, then you can collect only from Nechosim Menachorin, because again, then there's no coil about it. And the Rashbam adds also the same thing would be true also if he became an Orev Baal Peh, if it's not even written in the Shtar as well, same idea. You could collect from him, as we learned before, the Gemara had said that you first have to go after the Loiva. Only if the Loiva doesn't pay, then you go after the Orev, except in certain cases, we said certain cases of a Kablon or Nosim and Nosim B'Yad, as we learned about yesterday, Maimon Shloshtan is something else. Maimon Shloshtan is if you gathered the three of you together and said that the choiv that Shimon owes me, I'm transferring that choiv to you, Levi, that's something else. No, an orev is where Shimon is borrowing money from Reuven, and Levi says, I'll be the orev in case Shimon doesn't pay up, in case he skips town, in case he goes bankrupt or whatever, then I'll pay instead of him. So that's an orev.
Who gets him? Who arranges him? Who speaks to him?
What do you mean? So
Shimon gets him. Reuven borrows from Shimon.
So I'm saying Shimon is borrowing from Reuven, but yeah, same difference. Let's keep the names straight so we don't get confused. So Shimon borrows from Reuven. What we're saying is Levi. So you might have a few possibilities. You might have where Shimon himself goes to Levi and asks him, please be my Orev. You might have where Levi volunteers to be the Orev. You might even have where Reuven says, you know what, Shimon, I'm willing to lend you money, but first let me go talk to Levi. Whatever. You have different scenarios like that. Exactly. And we learned in the Gemara yesterday, we learned all about there are different possibilities of what Loshen Levi might use in becoming the Orev. When does he become a regular Orev? When does he become an Orev Kablon? Or when do we even have, you even have a case where he himself basically becomes the Loiver instead, where he himself is taking the money from Reuven and giving it to Shimon. Anyway, the point is that here we're talking about, again, either he takes on the Sareiris Baal Pen, it's not written in the Shtar at all, or it's written in the Shtar after the signatures. So then we're saying you can collect from him in the circumstances where you can collect from an Orev, but only from his Nechosim B'nei Chorin. And the Mishnah says, Maisa Bolif Nei Rabbi Shmuel. Such a case was brought to Rabbi Shmuel with a shtar that had an Orev written in it, but only after the signatures. V'omar, and Rabbi Shmuel said, like the Mishnah says, Govim Nechosim B'nei Chorin. However, Ben Nanas says to Rabbi Shmuel, Ben Nanas, we also, sometimes in the Gemara we call him Rabbi Shimon Ben Nanas. Here, this was before he had gotten smicha. So the Gemara often will do that. The Gemara often, sometimes we have some person never got smicha, and he continues to be known as Ben Ploini, Ben Azai, Ben Zoima, for example. Sometimes you have, for example, the Gemara mentions in Sanhedrin, we'll get to it in a few weeks, Be'ez Hashem, where Rabbi Yechon Ben Zakkai, when he was still a Talmud, is mentioned in one place as Ben Zakkai. And then later on, he becomes the famous Rabbi Yechon Ben Zakkai. So here also, Ben Nanas is later on known as Rabbi Shimon Ben Nanas. Anyway, so he says to Rabbi Shmuel, no, ain't a gove loymen a chosim, a shabbatim loymen a chosim ne chorin. Actually, in this case, this is not even a valid orev at all, because it's an orev. He became an orev only after the money was given. So therefore, he's not really considered an orev. You can't hold him to it, even if the loyver doesn't pay. So Rabbi Shmuel says, why? Didn't the guy accept on himself he's going to be an Orev? So Bananas answers, Hare hachoinikas echad bashuk. Consider a case where the Malva long ago lent the Loiva, and the Loiva is evading payment, and one day the Malva grabs a hold of him in the street. Choinik literally means he's choking him, not literally choking, or strangling him, you know, he's grabbing him by the lapels, knew, where's my money? And another yid meets up with them. And he tells him, let him go. Let the poor fellow go. Don't worry about the money. I'll pay you the money. Are you going to say that he's an order for that? Potter, he's Potter. Because the fact is, the Malva didn't lend the guy money originally, trusting that this guy is going to get involved. He only got involved long afterwards. So he's only getting involved right now and saying, I'll be an order just so the poor guy can be let go. So the same way, Ben Nanas argues, when you have an order, yes, he's written in the Shtar, but it's after the Edim signatures. So it's the same thing. So he never lent him money expecting that the Orev is going to pay, because otherwise the Orev would have been written into the body of the Shtar. Ela Ezahu Orev Shu Chayev. So rather, says Ben Nanas, what kind of Orev would be Chayev to pay? For example, he says, Halvehu Ani Noisin Lacha. He says, lend him money and I'll give you if he doesn't come through. So then Chayev, then we can make the Orev Chayev, Shekein Alamunasa Hilvahu, because he lent him money trusting that this Orev is going to come through with what he says. So if the Orev, so not only if the Orev is not written at all, but even if he's written, but it's after the signatures of the Edim, says Ben Nanas, no good. Well, so Rabbi Shmuel finishes off when he hears this. If a person wants to become wise, Yasek B'dinim Mominus, he should get involved in learning Dinim Mominus. There's no miktsoya in the Torah which is greater than them. Miktsoya literally means a corner. And in modern Hebrew, they often use it to mean like a field of endeavor, like a particular job or something. But it means similar to that over here. It means there's no area of Torah law that's greater than them. Behind kamayan haneveya, they're like a wellspring that's constantly welling forth. Because in other words, there were always new svaris and new ideas and all kinds of things in Dini Mominus. Maharsha points out that one thing about it is that you have very little, relatively speaking, very little of Dini Mominus is sourced in Torah. Here, for example, Avraham Moshe, you were asking the other day about a particular din that we were learning. Where's the source for it in a pasuk? And the answer is a lot, especially in Bava Basra. Very little of what we've been learning throughout these 175 blots so far of Bava Basra has been sourced in psukim. A great deal of it is based on essentially common sense. So therefore, so in that sense, we call it Kamayan Haneveya. It's like a wellspring that's constantly welling forth with new ideas with new ideas and new svaris. This is Teferes Yisrael explains this point. In other words, so a Dayan, in other words, has to be very good at finding precedents for the cases, at least in most other areas of Torah. Ultimately, what you can do is you can look at in the times of the Gemara anyway, you could look at the Psukim and you could darshan from them what to do and what not to do. Here you don't have that. So therefore he has to rely on his own judgment and his own ability to figure out the Midama Milsa La Milsa, to compare one thing to another. So therefore it's a Kemayan Haneveya. There's other points in it as well. The Iyun Yaakov makes a point that we know there's the famous expression, a Dayan has to have the finf to Shulchan Aruch. It's not enough that he's familiar with the four sections of Shulchan Aruch. He also has to have the sense, the sixth sense that a Dayan sometimes needs to have. And the Tosfos mentions, we're going to learn in Sanhedrin another week, Be'ez Hashem, or so. You have the expression, a Dayan should dun din emes la'amitoi. And Tosfos points out, what do you mean, emes la'amitoi? It means, in other words, that the Dayan has to not only know to judge correctly, but he has to know if he has a feeling, if he has a gut feeling that the Edom are not telling the truth over here or something, then he has to ferret out and figure out what's actually going on over here and get them to admit. That would be, so if he just did, if he said, you know what, I don't care whether what the Edom is saying is true or not, but they're saying something according to halacha, two Edom is the gold standard for evidence, so that's it, I'm just going to judge the case. That might be emes, but it wouldn't be la'amitoi. La'amitoi would be where he actually tries to ferret out the facts of the case. And the Iyun Yaakov over here actually tells a story in this connection. He says that there was a person claiming that he owned a certain coin. So the Dayan tells his shamash, go whisper to somebody in this guy's earshot, in this Tevea's earshot, that the coin has a certain simon on it, has a dent on it or something. And then if it's really his, then he would say so. He would know that it's his. So he does that, and then the guy comes to Beis Din and says, yeah, you know what, here I have, and the Dayan says, but this coin doesn't have that.
Not yours,
yeah. So therefore, that's the kind of thing that we mean over here, that a person needs tremendous chokhmah, haritza shiyach and yasek, but dinim mominus, shein kamayin haneveya, you always have. I mean, you could also say, I mean, I think also maybe a meaning of Kamayin Haneveya over here is also an idea that Poshet you have. There are always new kinds of business deals. People are coming up with new financial instruments, you have all kinds of things that nowadays are done in the business world that they had no concept of even a few decades ago in the stock market and so forth. So therefore, it really is Kamayin Haneveya. You constantly have new ideas for coming out, welling forth from the minds of businessmen, and then the Torah has to deal with has to deal with such cases. Anyway, Rabbi Shmuel says. So Rabbi Shmuel points this out. You have to do that. And he says, "V'haroitza sheyasek b'dinim mominus." You want to know something? You really want to be an expert in dinim mominus? Yeshamash as Shimon ben Nanas. Go learn by Shimon ben Nanas, who just pointed out to me this point about the orev, the distinction between the orev before the signature is before the loan versus afterwards, where now the Gemara, by the way, is going to end up mentioning, we'll learn tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, that even though Rabbi Shmuel is praising Ben Nanas' acuity and his sharpness in Dinim Mamonis, nevertheless, he doesn't agree with him lahalacha. Lahalacha, he actually argues with him and says you don't have that distinction between different types of Arevin. But nevertheless, he's praising that he's a real expert in Dinim Mamonis, and if you really want to know Dinim Mamonis in and out, then you'll learn by Shimon Ben Nanas. A couple of other interesting things in this. Ben Yehoyada points out the word miktsoya, he says, can also be, it's also the same letters as the word soyakim, crying out, and the word oiktsim, meaning shtechim. And he says, because one point about dinei mominus versus other kinds of things is there's another party involved. So therefore, sometimes you might have, and he gives a story over there where a guy comes to a Rav for a Din Torah, and he loses, and he's complaining, and the Rav says, let me ask you something, and if it had been a Kshayla and Hilchus Treifus, and I told you to throw out the animal, would you also be complaining? And the guy says, no, but the difference is here, it's not just that I lost the money, it's that the other guy won. So therefore, so that's what's stechting me. That's what's bothering me. So therefore, Rabbi Shmuel uses this unusual word miktsoya to hint at that point that dini mamonis, you have not just it's a complicated area of Torah, but also you have it's an interpersonal thing, and therefore that makes it a lot more complicated to arrive at something which everybody will accept. Marsha goes into a bit of arichus over here, and he says there's a connection between our Masechta and the next Masechta Sanhedrin that we're going to learn about. When a person becomes expert in Dinei Mamonos, then that gives him the Eibishter then gives him the ability to then be able to also decide about things of Dinei Nefoshes and things like that, which are the subject of the next, and Gzelus v'chavolus, cases where a person steals or injures somebody else, which are those that are going to be dealt with at the beginning of Masechta Sanhedrin. So because Haroitza Shiyakim, he wants to become wise in Torah, Yasek b'dinei Mamonos, and then Hashem will give him the ability to learn even more of the concepts of Seder Nezikin, namely the ones that we're going to learn in the next Masechta Sanhedrin.
But why did he mention by Ben Azai's point of
bananas, as you mean?
Of an Orif. What's so profound about what he said here, or actually, what is so astonishing that he said, oh, here I see his wisdom.
It's not so much, I mean, I guess you could say the same thing about anything that Ben Nana said in Dinei Mamonos. In this particular case, I guess you could say that Rabbi Shmuel here had not realized this distinction. And the fact is, again, the Gemara is going to say, as we'll learn tomorrow, that Rabbi Shmuel himself does not hold of that distinction. In fact, the halacha is, in fact, the Gemara ends up to say that the halacha is like Rabbi Shmuel, not like Ben Nanas. But nevertheless, he was very impressed by this distinction that Bananas is able to make in Dinei Mamonos, which would not be so obvious.
The lesson. That's exactly the lesson. This is the thing. Even though the halacha was not like Banana, but it was very wise, and they had so much wisdom to recognize each other and understand that they knew things that nobody really else understood better than them.
By the way, there was one time in Tufshin Mem Hei that ever made a hadron on Masechta Baba Basra. So we'll talk about more of what the Rebbe said tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, when we learn certain details about it in the Gemara. But one thing that Rebbe points out is this, that we're saying Horeitza Sheyachim Yasek B'Dinim Mominus refers to the idea that a person needs to be involved in Dinim Mominus of Mitzvah Satzdakah, which more than anything else, that's Mavara of the world, as it's Mavara of the world, and it also forms a fitting end. Here we've just spent over a year now learning the three Babas, all about Dinim Mominus. So now at the end of it, you start off with the Nezikin, you start off with the damages above a Kama, you go into the various matters of buying and selling and trade and whatnot above Mathia, and you come to Baba Basra, which are starts with Hashutfin about partners who want to split up, etc. Now at the end, we're talking about sort of a partnership between the Malva and the Loiva, and you do tzedakah, and that way you're finishing off the job of refining the world and refining everything, all the negativity of that we had in Bava Kama and Bava Matzia. So that's the Yachim as well. Okay. So the Gemara says, Oma Ula, Dvar Torah, when we say in the Mishnah that when it's a milva al peh, you can't collect from nechosim mishabodim, Ula says that no, that's not how it would have been minat Torah. Minat Torah, you would be able to collect from nechosim mishabodim always. My time is shibuda da'araisa, because Ula holds the concept of shibud is da'araisa. The Rashbam says we can learn it from the fact that we said the Torah tells us that when somebody owes you money, you're not allowed to go into his house to take something as a mashkin. However, he has to bring it out to you. Bachutz tamid, you stand outside, and he brings it out, the avoit, he brings you out a mashkin outside, implying that he's required to pay you. So in other words, the Yad Ramah explains what the Rashbam means. If there wasn't a shibud minat Torah, then Ula says, then you wouldn't have. The Loiva himself has to go and sell his assets and pay off the Choiv. The fact that the Torah requires him to bring out an avoit, to bring out a mashkin to you, implies that there's a concept of shibud minat Torah. Then the Ramban actually learns that the drosha might be the drosha, that posse could be used to darshin fakir, that she would have loved her, right? So the next opinion that we're going to say of Rabba, because the point would be, in other words, that since the pasuk is saying he has to bring you out the avoy, and you and even a shliach based in are not allowed to go into his house. So that shows that you don't have a shibun on his nechassim at all. The reason why he has to pay, and the reason why the shliach based in collects from him, is because prius bal choiv mitzvah, because there was a mitzvah to pay off your debts, but not because there's a shibun. Okay. So all those saying that that minat Torah there is shibud daraisa. The elam matam omu milva al pein and gove elam nechosim nechorin. So why does our Mishnah say that you collect only from nechosim nechorin? Mishnah say to the lakuchas, because the reason is you don't want the lakuchas to lose out, because again they're not going to know, there's no coil, and therefore they're going to end up buying crop, they're going to buy property, and it's going to get taken away from them. So we don't want that, because then nobody's going to want to buy property in the first place. Well, the Gemara asks, "Yehochi milva b'shtar nami." Well, then, shouldn't the same thing apply to a milva b'shtar as well? So why by shtar do we not say that? And the answer is, because in that case, the lakuchas themselves lost out. They knew that there's a coil, that there was a halva out there. If they choose anyway to go, and if they choose nonetheless to go and buy property from this guy, then they're taking their chances. Then that's their problem if it gets taken away from them. The Torah Chaim points out, why does the Gemara ask that question only on Ula? Shouldn't the question have been on the Mishnah, which makes the difference, which makes the distinction between Milva B'Shtar and Milva Alpeh? And he says, because you could say in a shtar, maybe you actually have to say in so many words in the shtar, I am Meshabed you my nechosim. As we find, for example, in a ksuba, you're right, kol nechose achroin v'arboin, etc. But here, Ula is saying that it has nothing to do with the shtar. It's just a matter of the lakuchas losing out. So why are we not concerned about that shtar or no shtar? Okay, so that's one explanation. Rabba Omar, Rabba says, on the contrary, Dvar Torah, Echad Milva B'Shtar, Ve'echad Milva Pe Enigoy Ve'elam Nechosim Nechorin. Rabba says exactly the other way around. When it comes, whether Minat Torah, B'Shtar, or Alpeh, you're only collecting from Nechosim Nechorin, never from Nechosim B'Shabodim. My time is Shibud Alavda Raisa, because Rabba says the Shibud is not Minat Torah. And what about the posik that Ula brought? So the Rashbam says that posik would refer to taking a mashkan afterwards. So you lent the guy money, he's not paying up. So you come to his house to seize a mashkan this way eventually he'll hopefully want his mashkan back and he'll pay you up. So then the Torah is telling you you can't go in and take a mashkan. Because in fact, the Gemara in Bava Metzia discusses that whole din that it says in the posik is not necessarily applying about when you're taking a mashkan b'shas halva, then maybe you would be allowed to go into his house. It's only b'shaloi b'shas halva also that you're talking about that you would go in and get that you would want to go in and get the mashkan, and the Torah is telling you you can't.
What's the point?
So the point is, according to Rabba, then you don't have a shibud daraisa. That posik is not referring to shibud at all. That posik is referring to something that happens after the fact. And again, as we just said, the Ramban points out anyway that since the posik faker, you could say even if it wasn't that, even if it was b'shas alva, the very fact that the Torah says you can't go in, and even the shliach based in can't go in, may show that shibud is not that shibud alav daraisa. So Rabba continues, Uma tam omu milu b'shtar goyim and chosim b'shabadim. So why the Chum say then that when it's with a shtar, you could collect from the chosim b'shabadim? The reason is because you don't want the door to be closed in front of people who are going to borrow. You're going to have like this. People are going to want to borrow money, and you're going to say, well, there's no shibud on it. So what's going to happen? You're going to borrow money from me. Then you're going to go sell or give away all your property, and I'll have nothing to collect from. Then I don't want to bother lending to you. So therefore, the Chachamim gave the Malva the ability to collect from the Chosim B'Shabadim. So that way he has more. That way he has more of a guarantee he'll be able to be paid back. Well, the Gemara says, Yehochi milval peh nami. Well, then why don't the Chum make that same takana by a milval peh? And the answer is, the Chosim less they call him, because there's no coil, and therefore the Chum didn't want that the Lakuchas should lose out unnecessarily. All right. So the Gemara asks, mi omer Rabba hochi? Did Rabba really say that Shibuda loved her Isa? The omer Rabba, didn't Rabba say back in the 8th parak, we were talking about a case where the Yoshim collected a debt that was owed to their father. And we said that a Bechor doesn't get it. We said that we talked about whether the Bechor gets a double portion of that payment. So Rabbi had said, Govu Karka, if they collected Karka in payment of the debt, then we consider because she brought a daraisa, we consider as though the karka belonged to their father when he was alive. So therefore, it's part of the nechassim that they inherited, and therefore the bechor gets a double portion. So therefore, yesh loy, therefore the bechor gets a double portion. Govum mois, but if they collected money, ein loy, then he doesn't get a double portion of it because there's no shibud on that. And therefore, it's not something that it's only roy. It's not muchzak. It's not something that was in the father's chazaka when he died. And as we learned previously, the bechor doesn't get a double portion of that. So the point is, we see that Rabba holds that on the face of it, that Rabba holds that shibuda daraisa. Either way, it's money that their father had lent out. But nevertheless, the fact is, Tosfos points out, when it comes to money, it's not the original money that their father had lent out that now is being paid back. But the main point is also, anyway, Tosfos says, the main point is there would be a shibud on karka, not on mois. And it sounds like Rabba is saying it would be daraisa to the extent that the son is getting a double portion of it. So you might say in that case, maybe you have to flip around the opinions over here about shibud daraisa or lav daraisa. The rabba ulo de ulo la rabba. Maybe we have to flip around and say that, and maybe we have to flip around and say that what Rabba had said is actually from Ula, and from Ula is Rabba. Hagoyes Habach adds a few words over here that Rab Nachman had said, which we had in the sugi over there, that it's the other way around, that Rab Nachman, that Rab Nachman had said, if they collect money, he still gets a double portion of it. So first we might say that we have to flip around Rabba's and Rab Nachman's opinions and say that Rabba would say that if he collected karka, then he doesn't get a double portion of it, and that would show that he holds shibud lav daraisa. But then the Gemara says it can't be, because we find in that sugi over there that the shmaita loy azlahachi, it doesn't work out, because we find that Abaya says to Rabba, I have an objection on your opinion about karka. So therefore we see that it's definitely Rabba said that, not Rab Nachman. So now we would go back and say, okay, but maybe on the other hand, the opinions of Rabba and Ula, respectively, about Shibud Daraisa and Lav Daraisa, maybe those have to be flipped around. The Gemara says no, because V'ha'oma Ula, because Ula himself said, Dvar Torah Bal Choyv Dine B'Ziburis. Minat Torah, a Bal Choyv would collect, if he's collecting from land, is going to collect only from Ziburis, only from the lowest quality land that the Loiva has. Because elsewhere, the Gemara explains that he actually learns that from the same Pasuk that we mentioned before about going and getting a mashkin from the loiva, where the Pasuk says, Yotzi Elecha, that the loiva brings out the mashkin to you. Now, what does a person usually bring out is the least valuable of his kelim. So we learn from that there's a concept that a Baal Choyv is going to be paid from the least valuable, and therefore when it comes to karka, we would also obviously not bringing out karka, but nevertheless, we would still say that he collects from the worst of that, and it's only midrabanan that he collects from beininess, again shalatino delas bifnei loivin, because we don't want that people should be discouraged from lending money, knowing that they may only get ziburis for it. So the point is, in other words, that Tosfos actually discusses what kind of ziburis do we mean? Do we mean karka? Do we mean nechosim? Is there such a thing as ziburis by nechosim by metaltlin, etc.? The point is, in other words, that Ula is clearly saying that Ula is saying that dvar Torah bal choy b'ziburis. So if you're saying that he's able to collect ziburis, that it's a minat Torah, that itself clearly shows there was a shibud daraisa. Otherwise, what's he collecting from anyway? The whole point would be the loiva would have to pay off, and we would say priyas bal choiv mitzvah. It's a mitzvah for him to pay off. But if we say shibud lav daraisa, then the malva doesn't necessarily have any further recourse, ziburis or not. The fact that Ula is saying he gets to collect from ziburis shows that he holds that shibud daraisa. So we're back to the question: if Rabba holds shibud derabanan, then how is he saying that there can be a case where the Yoshim collect karka in payment of the debt that there was owed to their father, and the Bechor is getting a double portion of it? So the answer is Ella Rabba Taimer Dibnei Ma Rava Kama V'Loi Lo Svirale. The answer is Rabba is not saying what he himself holds. He's explaining what the he's explaining that what the Bnei Ma'arava, when they were in that sugya there in the eighth parak, when they had said that there's a distinction between Tauka and Mois, when the Bechor gets a double portion and not. So Rabbah is explaining that according to Bnei Ma'arava, the logical distinction would be that if they collect Tauka, then the Bechor gets a double portion, and if they collect Mois, then he doesn't. Because again, then there's, according to them, we would say there's a shibud on the Karka. V'leilei Svirilei, he himself doesn't necessarily have to hold that. He would hold that either way, the Bechor is not getting a double portion because shibud alav d'araisa. So therefore, so there you go, then it fits nicely with what he's saying over here. So I think we'll pause over here then, and we'll continue tomorrow, Best Hashem, with more opinions on the subject of when you can collect on a milva, and when you can collect from when you can collect from lakuchas, and when you can't, and then Best Hashem will finish off the masechta tomorrow.